This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Bob, great to have you with us on the show today.
Steve Jones, long time, no here. Also, congratulations to you and Jack. I know you guys are, 25 years in, 300 broadcasts. At least 300 and counting.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're over 300. It's, you know, so they just haven't found anybody else yet. But Bob, thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Interesting team to this point. But before we get to that, Penn State eventually will play USC. Bear Alexander now says he wants to sit out and redshirt, which may lead to a postseason transfer. We'll see. That's his decision. And the Matt Sluka situation and all the varying stories around that at UNLV. What kind of look is this for the sport, in your opinion, pro and con?
Let's just put it this way. I don't think I'd want to be, forget about the salary, I don't know that I'd want to be a major college head football coach anymore. It just seems like there's too much to manage. Like, you're never ever done managing, developing, recruiting, re-recruiting, transfer portal shopping, you know, game planning, hiring new staff, you know, stuff. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a little bit I don't want to say it's not unsupervised, but it needs to be better supervised. It just seems like this was always a possibility, right? And if you're not going to get some of these guys, if there's nothing in writing and there's no contracts, I think this is going to happen. This is only the beginning. I think you're going to see, now that the dam is broke, so to speak, early in the season, that the closer you get to the end of the season and some teams that are probably going to be in the thick of the championship race, there's going to be some leveraging and there's going to be some negotiating until they can kind of take that out of the sport. Because as long as it's possible in a free market, why wouldn't you do it?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. Number one, I've said for the last couple of years that you have to be on pins and needles as a coach up to game four, because of the four-game transfer rule, you know, the redshirt rule. That's one. As in, the other part is, I'm waiting for the day when a team is 5-3, and the star, whomever it happens to be, says, "Hey, we're not going anywhere this year. I'm sitting out the rest of the year, and I'm going to get ready for the draft."
Oh, Steve, it's coming. I think it's about to happen. I mean, I think student athletes and the better student athletes have always thought about it. And it's just going to take a couple to spill open the faucet. I can remember, it might not be a perfect comparison, but I remember when Harrisburg's finest, Micah Parsons, after his second year at Penn State. Now, it was the COVID year, right? And there was some real question as to whether there was going to be a Big Ten season, but you know, after his second year, he made the decision that he was gonna get ready for the draft, and he would, you know, and obviously it it paid off for him. It's a different circumstance, but it's only a matter of time, and it's not going to be very long before that happens, Steve.
I mean, look, there's got to be reasons why Jeff Hafley left a head coaching job at Boston College to become the defensive coordinator of the Green Bay Packers, and Chip Kelly left the head coaching job at UCLA to be the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. Oh, and by the way, Jay Wright's no longer coaching college basketball.
It's all it is. I mean, well, first of all, Chip Kelly is a bit of a unicorn because he's so well compensated anyway. But it's just not worth. Life's too short to have to deal with that many issues, and it's the number of issues, Steve. But it's also it's every day. I can only imagine what James Franklin has to do on an hourly basis in his day, and I'm just talking about his job. I'm talking about players, assistant coaches, you know, parents, you know, who's happy, who's not happy. Are we going to lose this guy? What do we have to do to keep this guy? I mean, it can't go on much longer like this. And I think that the best head coaches, are going to look to be. They're going to look for softer landing spots where the money is still pretty good, but I would have a migraine every day of my life trying to manage the checks and balances of a major college football program. I don't see how James does it. I really don't, and I think that you're going to see a lot more coaches either become well-paid coordinators or they're going to go to the NFL because there are no headaches at the NFL level.
No, I mean, not like that. Nope, everything is structured. You got your contract, you have collective bargaining rules and so forth. Do you think, I'm going to get to Penn State here in a moment, but I'm trying to tap into this brain of yours here. Do you think collective bargaining is a step college football may have to take?
Well, I would have to think they have to figure out something. I've heard that before, that eventually will come. And it seems like something that would mitigate, I guess is the word, some of the issues they're having now. But I think one of the biggest problems that college football has is, as far as I can tell, there are either no rules or very few rules. And that is never a good business practice, Steve, as far as I'm concerned. So something's going to give, and maybe it'll take some issues like this that are happening right now that shed more light on the need, you know, from a national perspective to do something like collective bargaining, because it's just, Steve, the other thing is, I have to think that the average college football fan has about had it as well, because they've had to change a lot in the last couple of years, and maybe they've had to change, but it's just not really, it's not a professional sport, but the loyalty factor I think is huge, especially for some of the older fans that follow programs, and it's a tough sell to ask them to kind of be along for this ride. I just think they need to make some changes. I'm not sure what needs to change fast, but it's a sport that I think a lot of fans, Penn State fans, and I'm not singling out Penn State, but a lot of there were a lot of fans that loved college football more than pro football 10 years ago. And I think college football is giving people more reasons to not love it.
All right, so now let's get to this team. Penn State, of course, is off to a 3-0 start. Offensively, 12 quarters been pretty good. 10 out of 12 been good defensively. What's been your thought about them?
Yeah, right. So, you know, I think my thought about Penn State is they are still, like some other very good teams in college football, they are still a work in progress. And I think with the way that the landscape is now, where the good teams are playing, you know, true freshmen or redshirt freshmen, they need them more now than ever soon. And the roster management, with getting them up to speed and also getting the transfer portal guys up to speed, I think you're not going to see some really good teams hit their stride until probably the middle of October. And I think Penn State, I couldn't have been more impressed with how they opened that season in Morgantown. I know that West Virginia is not a top 20 team. That's a tough environment. They were sky high for that game. They had some really good players on that team, and Penn State, in all phases, were clearly superior. They weren't rattled at all by the weather delay, which I thought was significant. And I just think this team has not played its best football yet, but we've seen glimpses of what they can look like, because I really think the world of not only James's coordinators, but his entire assistant coaching staff. I mean, they're all on the same page. They are well prepared. And I just think there's, when you have a lot of young players and a lot of transfer guys, Steve, or that are going to play big roles, I just think it's going to take a little bit more time. And I'm not just talking about Penn State. I'm looking at Ohio State, some other teams on the national level. I think this is a fantastic test for Penn State on Saturday night. But and the other thing I would say is, I think you got to give your tip of the cap to the Bowling Green team that came into Penn State.
Yeah.
Because as James mentioned, and a couple assistants mentioned this week, they had Texas A&M on the ropes over the weekend. That is a very, very talented team that has a lot of experience and is very well coached. So I think when you look at Penn State's non-conference schedule, I think two of the three games have been very testing for them in different respects. But I think there's a little more to this non-conference schedule that Penn State played than maybe a lot of people think.
Yeah, Bowling Green lost 26-20, but what people don't realize is they blocked a punt and had the ball at the 8-yard line and did not score. They missed a field goal in that sequence, and that was late in the third quarter. So when you look at the progress of Drew Aller, what are you seeing, at least in the initial returns?
Steve, I just remember him, especially, and you know, he's just, I think the difference a year makes just mentally and physically for Drew is significant. I just remember he was, you could see the physical gifts at times last year, but he just wasn't really ready, I think, to be a team leader. In your second year, you look at Michael Robinson, you look at Trace McSorley, you look at Sean Clifford, you know, you look at a guy, even like a guy like Darryl Clark, and where they were, Kerry Collins, you look where they were in their second year at Penn State, and it's going to be different than the end result. And I just think the change in him in the last 12 months, mentally and physically, has been phenomenal. I wouldn't discount what he's done physically to get he was never in bad condition, but he is in better condition, and it's his ability to make plays with his legs. That is something that you need in college football. As far as the mental aspect of it, I just think, I don't know. I know that the former offensive coordinator had a lot, I think, to do with him coming here, but he just looks so much more comfortable and confident in his third year in the program. And I think a lot of it has to do with the growth of the class of 2022 around him, because they're all playing huge roles. Mm-hmm. And I just think he's playing for an offensive coordinator that knows how to use him and some of the offensive players better than the old offensive coordinator did. Not that Mike wasn't good at his job, but I think Andy Kolbenicki is really, really, really good at his job. I think this is what everyone expected Drew to be in his second year, and that, maybe that was a little bit unfair. But man, he's a different guy. He's more physical, and I just think the arm talent was always there, and the wideout room has grown up a little bit around him. Tyler Barnes' decision to come back, let's not underestimate that decision, because this is a completely different offense if he leaves for the draft. And, you know, the scheme and Bill Trautwein getting those offensive linemen, the guys that didn't start last year, ready to go. It's been a mesh of a lot of things, but I think Drew has been a catalyst for the offense. And I don't even think – I think he's got another gear he can get to, another level.
In some ways, in the people you've talked with around Illinois, could they say that about Luke Altmyer, the way he's playing this year compared to a year ago?
Yeah, I just got off the – I talked to somebody yesterday who covers the team, Bob Asmussen. He's covered them for a long time.
Bob's a good guy.
I wanted to ask him a couple of things, but I did ask him about Luke because of – you know, Luke's a storyline this year in this year's game, Steve, right? But he was the storyline in last year's game because
no doubt.
Bob's like, everyone sees the four picks in the ledger, but he also lost a fumble in that game. He was involved in all five turnovers, and he said two things about him. He said this is what Illinois always thought they had in him when they added him, I think via the transfer portal, was what you're seeing now. Mm-hmm. But Bob said he thinks that specifically what happened in the Penn State game has driven him to what you're seeing this year. He was so upset with himself and so determined to not be remembered for that specific game that he took it to heart the whole off season. And see, I watched a lot of the Nebraska game.
Yeah, me too.
He was really, really. They were all good. He was really good in that game. And I would just tell the Penn State fans that, you know, Beaver Stadium is an intimidating environment. The Penn State defense is going to get after him. But I'm positive he's not anything like the guy that Penn State saw last year.
I totally agree with that. Look, he has 10 touchdowns, no interceptions. Yes, he did fumble against Nebraska, but he has 10-0. And I think he's been accurate throwing the ball. They had the win at Nebraska. They have the win against Kansas. I felt in each game, personal opinion, that Illinois was the team that made the fewest mistakes, and they opened the door for the other two teams to lose the game, and they did. What's been your thought watching? Because they have some talent, there's no doubt, wide out, so forth, and that secondary. What's your thoughts on them?
Yeah, one of the things that jumped out to me, especially those are the two games that everyone's going to look at. I mean, the turnover margin for Illinois is +7. I think they've had three turnovers, and I think something like maybe 10 they've gotten. You know, if they protect the ball on Saturday night, they're going to be really, really, really hard to beat. But that's also something that Penn State stresses. So, you know, turnovers usually decide a big game, but with the way these two teams play, it might come down to something else if form holds. As far as what impressed me the most, the game that I really got to see, I only caught a little bit of the Kansas game late. But looking at the replay of that game and watching the Nebraska game is the turnovers were significant, but Illinois looked to be the stronger team at the finish in both games. They finished both games off. They were stronger in the Nebraska game. They had to come from behind, right? They were behind at halftime, and I think they had to come from behind again. Mm-hmm. And they were able to throw it. They were able to run it, and their defense, their pass rush overwhelmed that freshman quarterback in the Nebraska offensive line late in that game. I thought Illinois took that game. The other thing is they went for it on fourth down. They played to win. Bielema is that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. That's going to show up on Saturday night. He's not scared. He is not scared of the moment. That's why, you know, he's been a heavy underdog a few times, and he's hung in there not only against Penn State but against Michigan. He's done that. This team's not scared, and I think the players know that if the coach believes in them, That goes a long way. I think this team is a physical team that is going to be hanging around, and they're not scared of a fight. But I do think your point about not losing games, which a lot of teams do lose games, is significant, and I think that's probably going to show up again on Saturday night.
Last question, Bob, and it deals with Nicholas Singleton. We know what he is as a running back. What's been your thought and his impact on the passing game from what you've seen so far?
Yeah. This is, you know, you saw flashes of it, I think, his first 2 years. You saw, I think you saw more flashes of it the last couple of games last year. And you saw it in the bowl game. I think you saw it at Michigan State. I think the smart play is always to get him the ball any way you can in space, because he can beat you two different ways, right? He can beat you with his speed if he gets clear, but he can also run through the tackle of somebody and turn a 1 yard catch, you know, into a 40 yard catch. I think he did that in Detroit against Michigan State, and I just think that there were times they tried to get him the ball earlier than 23 in the passing game, but the way that this mad scientist Andy Koldelnicki schemes up his offense, you could tell he's like, I haven't had this kind of talent to work with before, and I'm going to get these guys the ball, and I'm going to get them the ball in space, and let's see if I dare the other team to try and tackle him. And he's done that. Steve, you look at that game against West Virginia. One play that stood out to me was the pass to Catron Allen over the middle. He got the ball in space, I think, around the 16-yard line in the first half, and he just ran through three or four guys. I just think it. Sometimes you overthink it. Sometimes you keep it simple. You design a play or you design a run to just get these guys to the second level, and they'll take it from there. And I think that Singleton is a guy that you're going to see him in the passing game against Illinois, and against the better teams they're going to play, and he's going to get him the ball. I mean, Joe Moorhead did it with Barkley, right? Joe Moorhead knew that if he got the ball to Barkley, what a weapon he was in the passing game. And I think the same holds for Singleton. They're not necessarily the exact same running back, but good luck catching him. Good luck catching him if they get clear.
Bob, always great work by you. Tremendous respect for everything you do. And thanks for the time you gave us today. I really enjoyed it.
Steve, I'll see you Saturday. Good luck. Thanks for having me on your show.
Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. This half hour brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is having their fall kickoff blitz. Savings of up to $12,416 and financing as low as 0%. Score a great deal on the award-winning 2024 Ford Bronco Sport, and SMC has 18 in stock, priced from as low as $29,965. Sunbury Motors is going to give you a Hail Mary of a deal on over 50 2024 Ford Escapes, priced as low as $27,915. Plus, get 1.9% financing for 60 months. SMC is the Hall of Fame of Ford F-150s, with 35 available, with discounts of over 12 grand, and they are slashed to the lowest price of the season, starting at only $48,859. Don't let the play clock run out on these awesome deals, as the final drive of savings ends Monday, September 30th. Sunbury Motors is a fifth-generation Ford dealer, proudly owned by the Mertz family for over a century.